Three, two, what up, though? Welcome to a new episode of Don't Blame Me, Blame Detroit podcast with your boy Brandon Jordan. And just got a couple things before we start. Dallas, Arlington to be specific. I'm going to be down there from the 21st to the 23rd at the Arlington Improv. Five shows. Me and my boy Ron Taylor, we coming in, we're going to destroy. And then the week after, the 28th and the 29th, I'm at the Denver Improv. So all my Denver people got to come out and show out. So I got a very special guest on the podcast today, and we're going to jump right into it. This dude right here, man, is somebody from my childhood that I looked at and wanted to be like. This dude is from L.A., the third round pick from the 2001 draft, played 13 NFL seasons with the Carolina Panthers, the Baltimore Ravens, five-time Pro Bowler, three-time All-Pro, Triple Crown winner, Man of the Year 2015 and 16, and he's an analyst on the NFL Network. So I want to welcome to the podcast Steve Smith Sr. How you doing, my dog?
What's up, dog? How you doing?
Good. It was a lot more accolades. I said, man, I'm gonna lose out of breath talking all that stuff up. But man, how was your vacation?
It was good. It was much needed. Playing catch up now.
Okay. I tell you this, I'm a big Minnesota Vikings fan. And okay. So last year when I seen that you was at our training camp, I thought you were signed on to be a coach. I was like, oh man, my man Justin Jefferson about to really get that coaching that he need. Yeah.
Nah. Y'all got a really good coach. Keenan McCardell is down there. Y'all also got a young boy, Blake Prohl.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited to see what he's going to do, obviously, with Adam Thielen now being Carolina.
Right.
So we got the opportunity. Adam's going to bring some knowledge, be able to help some of the young guys here in Carolina, but then also gives Blake an opportunity for him to get his chance to really show what he can do. And then, you know, you got guys have some other receivers there that could do some work too, do some damage. So it'll be interesting to see how things work out just overall for both transitions. Yeah. And situations.
Okay. I tell you, when I was, researching just about, you know, saying about your life, one thing that I ain't gonna lie, everything I read was like, okay, it was one thing that I was kind of surprised about. It was that I did not realize that you were from L.A.
Yeah.
I don't know, because I'm from Detroit, but I didn't live in a lot of places. Your demeanor doesn't say L.A. to me. Like, you remind me of somebody I cast that I met from the South. I don't know why, but you...
I'm getting calmer now. That's why. People here in Charlotte would disagree. I mean, you know, we run, obviously your workplace where we run into each other is, over the years, I try to just kind of be low key and try to keep mm-hmm. to myself. And people just expect this flamboyant, like boisterous, mm-hmm. Individual all the time. And, you know, that's not, I don't want to say that's not me, but I've really kind of corralled a little bit. And also, too, I just, I kind of like stand to myself a little bit. So,
yeah.
So even in my office, like this is my office, there's times where there people walk by and I got the lights off in my office,
yeah.
But I'm in there. And so it's just kind of like, I sometimes enjoy the quietness, right? You know, mm-hmm. some people don't enjoy being by themselves. I recharge sometimes being by myself.
Okay. No, I respect it because I'm similar way. I'm very, like, people, like, in the comedy world, I'm, you know, saying a lot of people know me, but at the same time, I can be very standoffish. You know, which can help me, you know, saying sometimes, and which, you know, can hurt me in other ways too, because I'm not the type of person when, you know, when, say if, like we're in a circle and Dave Chappelle or, you know, Kevin Hart, somebody just comes in the room, I'm not one of the ones that's trying to rush and trying to, and just have meaningless conversation with them just because they're in the building. I'm the one like, hey, what's up, man? And I'm going to keep it pushing, you know? Now, if we got something to talk about, we got something to talk about. But I'm just, you know, that's just how I always rock, too. So I respect that. I respect that. But let me ask, so what made you, you know, saying, or what situations had you end up going to Santa Monica versus going to a big major right off the bat?
I really didn't focus on school much. I had some things growing up. Even now, there's times when I do television. My first day of television, you know, I struggled. You know, I have a speech impediment, so mm-hmm. sometimes there's certain words. If you look or watch at times, there's certain words where I have the word in my head.
Yeah.
It can't come out. I was just shooting my podcast, and we were talking about three out of my four of age, you know, they play high school sports, and then they all had opportunities to play college sports.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, one is only playing college sports. The rest of them have decided just to be students.
Right.
And so what am I trying to say is one of my boys who's 17 right now, will turn 18 today, he's a basketball player.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, college basketball is bananas with the transfer
portal.
So I have to emphasize that.
Okay.
And so there's times where, because of that, I know I struggle with my speech, and so I have to practice certain words in the mirror over and over. I have to make sure, because I sometimes talk, you know, like that, and mm-hmm. so I have to constantly, you know, just have that muscle memory. And so with that, I just kind of always have had that in the back of my mind.
Okay.
And so academically, at times, I haven't always felt comfortable.
Okay.
And, you know, when you don't feel comfortable, you sometimes, well, I'm not going to really talk, or I'm not going to do the work. And so earlier in high school, I just didn't have the grades. And a lot of it had to do with, because I struggled in that area,
mm-hmm.
I have gotten the label at times of being, you know, people think I'm dumb.
Okay.
Or think that I'm not, you know, I'm not intelligent. And so it's just been that internal mental gymnastics that I do in my head. And I've fallen to the laziness of, well, people already don't think I'm smart anyway, so let me just kind of, you know, give me an opportunity to kind of just sit back and, you know, play to that narrative.
Okay. So, go ahead.
So that led to me really not believing or taking an SAT.
Oh, okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so because of not taking an SAT, you obviously can't get into college.
Right.
So around my juniors, you know, end of my junior year, ahead of my senior year, I really started to rethink, what do I want to do? And I obviously wanted to play college ball. So Santa Monica was that avenue. And so community college was the way I felt that I was competent enough to get into college.
Right.
And I felt comfortable. And so I went to Santa Monica, and that's how it is. But even looking back, I did some things in junior college that, man, if I look at that 43, bro, I'll be scared to death. So in junior college, you can either take certain classes, you can either test out or take the course.
Mm-hmm.
So I always loved math because I think numbers tell a story.
Okay.
But I never took math. So I had to take a test to graduate to get my AA to go to the University of Utah. But they only offered the test a week before graduation. So I walked in the test, did it, and I found out like 3 days before graduation, I passed the test. And I was out. When I passed the test, you know, I didn't walk the stage. There was no ceremony. And I was out. I left, I think, July 5th, July 6th, right after 4th of July.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Utah. And what's funny is, I think when I left then, I have yet to hold a residence in the state of California since. Wow. I haven't come back, and you know my mom has a place out there, but mm-hmm. I haven't yet to come back. I don't have any real estate in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
I left 99, July 5th, July 6th, 99,
and never look back.
No, I visit. You know, me and my family, we come out every couple of years and stay for about 2-3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I've driven from flown to LA, driven to Vegas, Arizona, Utah, in an RV. We've done all. I won't buy any real estate in LA.
Well, I ain't mad at you. I ain't mad at you. I tell you, I got a similar situation though. When I was in high school, 2 weeks before prom, I get called into the counselor's office, and the counselor tells me, "Hey, you know you're not graduating, right?" And I'm like, "What you mean I ain't graduating?" She said, "Come on now. You've been here 4 years. You should know that you're not graduating." And so she said, "You got one option. She said, this one week, you can go take these internet classes. If you pass the test, you can walk. If you don't pass, you're in summer school." Man, I never studied so hard in my life. Wow. I literally, in 1 week, I had to redo what I could have did in 4 years.
Yeah, and I like to make things difficult.
And the thing about it was, the only thing that motivated me to pass that test was, I cannot tell my mama I'm not graduating.
Oh, yeah.
That was the only thing that motivated me.
That's a key selling point, though.
Yeah. Now, with your struggles that you had, did that make you put more emphasis on your own kids and their education?
No, I don't think it made me put more on this. I think what I've done is, one, I've borne the burden of giving them the opportunity that I've always told them is, you don't have to run, jump, or shoot to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
And so anything that they've been able to get scholarship-wise, what I've put aside for them for college is a bonus.
Okay.
And so what do I mean by that is, you know, my oldest son, he's an accountant. He's actually finishing up his master's in business accounting. And so he already has a degree in business accounting, but he's getting his master's because what I've taught them is ownership. And so to become a partner for the company he works for, or to be considered a partner at some point, you got to have those other, you know, other PhDs, MDs, and all those other initials that I don't have.
Mm-hmm.
That's associated. So so he's getting his master's in business accounting at University of Chapel Hill to be able to get that, so he could be a, you know, partner. But we're paying, you know, me and my wife and we're paying for him to get his master's because I told him, "Hey, while you're young enough, you don't have a family, you don't have any kids, go ahead and do that now, because at 40 or 50 years old, you're not going to be able to be a father, husband, and to be able to work and go to school, right? That's too much to balance."
Mm-hmm.
"And I'm not going to pay for that." Right? If you got a family, I'm not doing that. But, and so being able to take care of that and giving them that opportunity has really put it on me to say, hey, you know, I got to do right too. And save up to make sure they know that they have that fallback plan of dad has me. Mm-hmm. Right? And so, you know, my 17-year-old right now, my daughter she just finished her cosmetology school. So she's heading to she's gonna be shadowing pretty soon to be able to do hair, and then eventually, you know, the goal is to, you know, be her own business.
Yep.
And then my son does photography, who he's going to college, and he has an opportunity to play college basketball, but the schools that he has academically been accepted, unfortunately, they don't have any scholarships, and they haven't, and then also one of the schools that he's looking at, the coaches got fired. And so he's like, you know, he wants to play college ball, but he doesn't want to play college ball at a school that doesn't have his academics, that doesn't have his major. And so he was like, what do you think about that? I said, well, our job is to support you, not tell you what to do, right? Mm-hmm. To guide you. So he's most likely going to go to that school because they have his major. He's already communicated with them and doing some internships, heading into his freshman year. He's just being able to go forward academically and not be, I say, held back by whatever financial restriction he has, to be able to allow him to go into college and just be a college student instead of collegial, you know, college and student athlete.
Oh, so let me ask you, because you're the first. So you're the first, you know, celebrity, named person that I had on the podcast that have adult, you know, children. Mm-hmm. How do you, this is kind of like a two-part kind of question. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about your kids using your name to advance and stuff that they want to do?
It's a balance. It's a healthy and unhealthy balance. Because there are times where I feel like they're just talking about that, but then because I'm interacting with people all the time, that there's times where I have to be very mindful that they're still my kids, and they don't see me as this. So it's like even at times when I go home, it's a struggle because it's little Steve. Some of my aunts and uncles. Mm-hmm. But little Steve is 43 years old with a wife and four kids. So it's that balance between I'm their nephew, but then I'm also this grown man.
Right.
Their nephew, but I'm this grown man with a name. So it's that balance, right? So do I do a great job about it all the time? No. Mm-hmm. And we all live and learn. So I'm not going to sit here and say that, like, oh, my family uses me. But it is sometimes hard not to feel used. Mm-hmm. Because, like, there's times where, you know, when you do comedy, you don't always want to be on.
You're exactly right.
Not everybody wants, you know, you don't always want to tell a joke.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes you don't really care what the other person wants to hear. Sometimes you want to hear somebody ask you how your day is going versus you brightening up somebody's day.
You hit it right on the nose right there.
Yeah, so it's a healthy balance, right? There's times where I've had to catch myself because there's somebody may say, hey, man, I love taking a picture with you. Hey, can I get an autograph? Hey, how about this? How about that? And sometimes those people don't know. That may be the 10th autograph or the 10th ask for that day. And it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
You know? And so, like, here's an example that this is so small. I remember, I think this happened about 7 years ago. I went to the grocery store to pick something up, and there's a lady at a cash register. And I said, how are you doing today? She said, you know, she was in her fourth hour at the register. Mm-hmm. She said, you know, you're the first person to ask me how I was doing today. And yet she's been checking people in and out, bagging their groceries. And so I try to remember that. So a lot of times if I go to a grocery store, if I go to a store interaction, I always try to say, how are you doing today? Hmm. And it's made me real mindful, but it also kind of sometimes I get in my feelings a little bit because I may ask 10 people how they're doing today. And sometimes very few of them either respond or some of them, well, how are you today?
Yes. Yeah, I feel that. Yeah, I feel that. Like, how do you feel like your celebrity is now versus doing when you was playing?
Oh, I mean, I think it varies. When I was playing, I think playing over the years has made, playing sports, I think at times, it's a gift and a curse. Because people always, for some reason, unlike, you know, the movies, I think fans believe that everybody wants to know their opinion about what you think about someone, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, because I do a podcast, we talk about ball, or sometimes, you know, or my commentating, especially with social media, people feel like it is, you know, they're right, or they feel that somebody told them in their head that, hey, tell this individual how you feel about what they just said on TV, right? And it's always like, you know, oh, you suck, or you're not very good. And so in the beginning, when I first used to do it, I used to have a little smart reply. I was like, man, this direct deposit, don't agree with you, right? But now I understand, and it's one of those things where, you know, you're right. And so a lot of times, sometimes I say, yeah, you're right. Like somebody called me, we're talking about, one, especially in sports right now, I'm doing a lot of evaluating, mm-hmm. And doing a lot of evaluation on wide receivers. People seem to tell me how I'm incorrect or I'm wrong or I don't know what I'm talking about. And I'm just giving my opinion based on the measurements and the standards at which I'm doing the scouting. So you don't have to agree with it, but I just notice when people don't agree with your job and what they're paying you to do, mm-hmm. people seem to get in their feelings a little bit. And so somebody told me the last couple of days, bottom of my podcast stuff, I'm an idiot, I'm hating. And someone said something and I responded, because I do respond on my podcast stuff. I responded to an individual who said that, I'm an idiot. I'm a has-been. And I said, man, the shade from your tree is wonderful. Thank you. I appreciate it. Right? So it's like, man, you hate me. You're just jealous. Man, I'm not sure what I'm jealous about, a guy going through an evaluation process. I'm not jealous of that evaluation process. Mm-hmm. They can have that. So I don't know. So it's a healthy love and hate, but just trying to figure it out myself, you know.
Yeah. Hey, how much was it an adjustment when you first started being an analyst to judging from being a player to now judging your peers?
It was a huge adjustment because I was raised in a household where we were just unfiltered, you say how you feel. You give your opinion whether it's asked. And so now just I try to talk about what I see that's good and try to minimize the things that may come across negative. Like for instance, I just came out with, I call it Agent 89's Gang of Misfits, right? So I got about 12 or 13 wide receivers that I like.
Okay.
But I worked with my social media team in not ranking them. And because I know people will take what I say and use it. One, they're going to use it. They're also going to use it to their benefit. Some of the players that are not mentioned have said, dang, oh, you know, why didn't you mention me? And so I spent like I spent about a week with my team formulating how can I come out with this list of players that I like. One, not rank them. Two, not put them down, but I'm also, I have to be critical of them because this is a evaluation. This is not the YMCA. Not everybody's a winner. Not everybody will be drafted at the place where their family members believe they will be drafted. Mm-hmm. And so I tried to. So I came up with this ranking, and so I did what I like is numbers, and I liked real estate. I like stock market, making money. So I used stock market symbols. And so the tweet was, I don't want to rank them, but I do believe in a bear and bull market. And so I did arrow for green, which is the stocks of those individuals are rising based off the my professional opinion and also some of the professional opinions of some of the general managers, scouts, assistant general managers, head coaches, and positional coaches in the league that have talked to me and I've talked to them.
Okay.
And then I've used the symbol of neutral, which is they're not rising or going down.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's two players that originally when I was started the evaluation process in February, they were ranked top 10, like they were going to be drafted in the top 10. Now they have dropped out of the top 10 and also out of the first round. So I put red down arrows and then I color coded it. So the guys that are stocks are rising, I put them on here. The guys that are neutral, put them in here. And the two guys out of my list that were down, I put them over here and I put it all together, put it on the board and I tweeted it and put it all on my social media. And so trying to do it that way. And so I have to sometimes spend a lot more time in being creative on articulating what I mean and why so people don't take it so negatively, right? Mm-hmm. And then even if I do that, I still get people going. So I got some guy that he tweeted out, oh, why not this guy? You didn't mention this other guy, Steve. Why you didn't mention him? And then he puts the comparison of me when I was coming out, the comparison of the other guy. And the other guy now is ranked higher than me. And why didn't I, you know, why didn't I add this guy from the list? Or why you hate me? And so I try to like creatively just ignore it. But then I'm also like, bro, I'm trying my best, man. Like,
mm-hmm.
I can't pick all 50 guys. Right? Let me show you.
Right.
So this is my hook. Right? So all these players. First of all, I got other things to do.
That's a thick little book right there.
Look, this is just my book.
Right. That's a thick book.
Yes. That's the dumbed down version. Let me show you what it used to look like.
Hell no. Nah.
So for me, it's like, you know, and I'm like, and I try not to get into it, but I'm like, bro, first of all, you talking about a kid who we had the same or similar measurements. Bro, I played 16 years. If I turn on his film, I turn on my film, I'm going to let you know. I can look at a kid in 5 minutes and tell you what I think about.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also insensitive.
Yeah.
And so I try not to do that.
Okay.
Because a real ball player, in my personal opinion, I can watch a guy play a game and tell you or give you at least a good understanding of what kind of player he potentially can be.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, no one really knows until potential and circumstances what will actually happen.
Right.
And so that's where you kind of got to be careful, right? Like, people are like, oh, man, he reminds me of Megatron. No, he don't. Stop it. I watched Megatron play, and people didn't even know when Megatron was drafted that Megatron
was going to be that. Did you know he had the skill set?
Yeah, you'd be like, man, he's special. But no, like, you know, man, this kid from Georgia Tech, he looks like he's going to be one of the best wide receivers for the next 5-6 years straight to ever play. Stop lying. You don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because if you did, you would have picked him and not allowed him to be picked by somebody else.
Right.
Right? So, you know, so just stuff like that. Like, so, like, this is my list. I haven't even started. But this is my chart that I'm supposed to start with. And you notice the first round, second round, then third round, real small.
Mm-hmm.
So I handwrite all that and I'll fill it in.
Okay.
And so when the draft goes, I'll have my list of guys that I think are going to get drafted in which rounds, and then I'll mark them. And then obviously, just, you know, a guy that's supposed to be in the first or second round drops to third or fourth, or a guy that's supposed to be here drops there. So, you know, we'll see.
Well, I got one more thing I want to ask you. So yeah. When you knew you was getting drafted, did you have a team in mind that you wanted to go to?
Yeah, at the time I wanted to go to the St. Louis Rams. I had taken two or three trips. I had visited, I think, Chicago and St. Louis. I had visited those teams. You know, I was a 49ers fan, still am. And so, I wanted to go to the 49ers. But, you know, once it gets going, I was a third round pick. So after once it starts to get going, now you get desperate. You're just like, man, I just want to be picked. Right?
Yeah.
I got the Panthers picked me. And then the St. Louis Rams at the time, it was Henry Eller. He had called me, congratulated me because I took a trip out there. And then I think the Buffalo Bills, they had my former coach in college out there. So they were trying to snag me. So I had three teams I had talked to after the Panthers. Well, two other teams that talked to me after the Panthers had drafted me that I was also hoping to go to just because, you know, of meeting those individuals, meeting those people.
Okay.
So yeah. What was that? I went to Chicago. Dick Geron was the head coach. Todd Haley was the wide receivers coach. He had just got the job from Dallas. He was assistant wide receivers coach. Henry Eller, being a Los Angeles Ram and growing up watching him and Flipper Anderson. So I was at all with meeting Henry Eller. And then obviously, you know, I had never been anywhere far. So I didn't know where North Carolina was. I didn't get on an airplane until I went to Utah from LA.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I went to college, you know, we had to fly the game. But other than that, I had never really been beyond, I think, Texas at the time.
Okay.
So I wasn't used to flying all over the country and all over the world.
Okay. So you got anything that you want the people to know about coming up?
Just my podcast, Cut to a Podcast. And, you know, my office here that you see that's in the backdrop, and why we couldn't. I just opened up, my foundation opened up a mental health urgent care facility here in North Carolina.
Okay.
So that's, we've been working on that for the last 2 years with the city and the county here in Mecklenburg and Charlotte, mainly with the county, and we have some city resources as well, and just dealing with that. And so it's been good. And then we have our urgent care. Our foundation also, have an urgent care that serves only the uninsured.
Okay.
And then we have an after-school program that is catered to kids that are experiencing homelessness. So all of the resources and the services that my foundation provides are based on One, people of color. Two, people who have less than, are below the poverty line. And then three, also the programs and structure for things that I've experienced growing up in LA, where that, you know, homelessness, you know, free lunch and reduced lunch, a lack of public services. So we try to provide all those things. And so my foundation is really, our programs are just based on the things that I know that I experienced, or people that were close to me that experienced that didn't have. Okay. So that's what we do.
That's dope. And man, again, man, I appreciate you coming on to the podcast. You know, this was an episode I was super excited to have. And just thank you again.
No problem, man. We got the internet up.
You know, yep.
Bro, man, last couple of weeks, when you open up a new facility, bro, we'll see. The internet went out. Plumbing went out. The week before, we got our power cut off.
Oh,
because, you know, it's just changing and moving, and somebody didn't do this, or somebody said we did. So, man, it's been fun.
And and when I come, I'm trying to actually come out that way, because I love North Carolina. So if I get an opportunity to come out there sometime this year or early next year, man, I'm gonna let you know so you can come out to the show, man.
Man, the guy that actually was really, we used to do a lot here in comedy, Mike Hall. He passed away, so I think a lot of the comedy stuff. At the comedy zone, it really hasn't been. No one's really taken on since his passing. So I think, you know, hopefully things are picked back up. But since we lost him, man, it hasn't been the guys same. That usually come through.
All right, man. This is another episode in of Don't Blame Me, Blame Detroit, and I'll holler at y'all next week. All right, man. Peace out.
Recordings.
Here we go. See?